This is attorney Robert Liptak. Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I am speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Again, this is attorney Robert Liptak, so this is a legal program. But please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life in Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The first series of shows has been a general overview of the big picture of debt in its four stages. One, the pre-debt stage before we take it on. Two, the comfortable stage of having debt. Three, the slippery slope stage. And four, finally, the apparent abyss one can fall into financially. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. As previously emphasized, debt is very pervasive in the United States today. Just recently, the Federal Reserve has said that there is almost $30,000 in outstanding debt, that's consumer debt and home mortgages together, for every man, woman, and child in the United States. When we calculate that out, we're looking at collectively $9 trillion in debt. If we look at the whole picture, times are volatile and very shaky when it comes to the economy, unfortunately, and debt. There is a lot of unfortunate news in the economy today, just with respect to homes. As you know, if you're reading the newspapers or listening in on the media, millions and millions of homes in America are in foreclosure, and that's just apparently the beginning of the onslaught. There have been some attempts by the government and so-called big banks to alleviate this problem. The New Hope Project is one example, but we're finding out that these hopes are not really coming to fruition and that mostly people's homes are not being saved. With the foreclosures and the general housing market, for example, the value of houses is generally going down. The predictions are quite dire. I looked at figures from California and Florida in terms of projections, and we're looking at 40 to 50% reduced value in those properties. In the state of Iowa also, we're being hit by this. The projected figures are about 7 to 10% reduced value of the homes in Iowa just because of the economy, the market, and the way the housing market in foreclosures is happening. A lot more homes are available, and this depreciates the value of everyone's homes. Another result is that as the value of the home goes down, the equity, if any, that a person has in their home is actually being reduced. And that for many people is a savings account that they have for the future, and their retirement is the equity in their home. We were told that about 9 million American households have negative equity in their home. That's a big number. What that means is that these people have more debt on their home than it is now worth. So the house is underwater, as we say. It's worth less than we owe on it. According to Merrill Lynch, the aggregate mortgage debt exceeds aggregate homeowner equity by $836 billion in the United States. That's a big figure. The housing picture has really been exacerbated or worsened by fraudulent lending practices, and they have resulted in a greater plunge in home equity too. Frankly, we've seen an ineffective response from Congress, from the White House, and from the Federal Reserve on the home issue, just as one issue. While, ironically, at the same time, there's been a much greater policing of the debtors in America, for example, through the bankruptcy law. And it's probably true that if we put as much effort in policing the creditors as we do the debtors, we would not be in the economic mess we are in. But unfortunately, that's not the case. As I said, the predictions are somewhat dire. It will probably get better. It'll probably get worse before it gets better in the upcoming future. The Wall Street Journal has just recently said that interest rates on $362 billion worth of subprime adjustable rate mortgages are scheduled to increase in 2008. As a bankruptcy attorney, I know that these kinds of mortgages, once they readjust, are mostly unreachable amounts of monthly payments by these people. So the bottom line is that people won't be able to keep their homes once these rates change, and they do change quite astronomically at times. So that's 2008. The Wall Street Journal also predicts that in 2009 and 2010, rates on an additional $950 billion worth of mortgages will reset. This is not a good posture for the American homeowner. So that's just looking at the mortgage side of the equation, or factor in the equation. The U.S. economy is also being hit hard, frankly, because of the outsourcing of many, many jobs that formerly were held by American workers. Factories are moving to foreign countries. Jobs are being lost in the U.S., and that's growing in leaps and bounds. And a lot of it is the result of big business practices cutting back, trimming back in their both need, desire, and mandate to maximize their profits. But also, a lot of these big businesses are being hit by the economy at large, and we're seeing corporate bankruptcies, mostly Chapter 11s, which are reorganizations, but we also see these Chapter 7s, which are liquidation bankruptcies for airline companies now. In the last week or so, we've seen three or four of them go down. Subprime lenders, lots and lots of those have gone down in the last 2 years. And as I said, corporations are largely laying off people just to trim the excesses in their profit-reducing situations. So that's another concern. A lot more people are looking for jobs out there. And of course, these people have bills and mortgages and debt that they have to service. So they're looking at some personal crises because of the general economy. We're also seeing that higher education is extraordinarily expensive nowadays, and people are continuing in their quest to get degrees. And mortgage payments are increasing, as we said, but also medical costs are increasing greatly. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. And right now we're just discussing some of the big challenges in the American economy that are affecting individuals and increasing the debt that people have, or the challenges they have in dealing with the debt that they had prior to the economic problems that are really permeating the entire population of America. We're talking about some of these areas I just said that the medical costs are actually also hemorrhaging. High technology in the medical area is becoming very, very expensive. The pharmaceutical situation is very expensive. Insurance, there are more things in insurance policies as we see that are not being covered. There's less and less preventive coverage in many, many policies, and there are a lot of fine print exclusions in these policies. So when we're hit by some medical expense, we suddenly realize, well, only part of that is covered. It's not totally covered. Or this thing isn't covered. And in the preventive area, there's a lot of those that we find are out. This, of course, causes a panic and crisis for the individuals who are involved, thinking that they were in good hands, but finding out that they're going to tumble down without any support. Now, it's unfortunate, but the truth is that our economy greatly favors the ultra-wealthy and big businesses through extraordinary tax advantages. And then even recently, we see the Federal Reserve and government rescue missions for billion-dollar companies like Bear Stearns. So the ultra-wealthy are being protected, but the cost of living is going up with the cost of fuel and food, etc. The cost of living increases are large, yet the salaries and the wages are not catching up. So there's this growing gap. We also see that the markets are very volatile, especially in risky but high-yield profit kinds of investments, which are very seductive, but that's really for the wealthy. It's not for the average investor. Just for example, in the last 4 years, while the government was targeting bankruptcy filers, the credit industry turbocharged profits with predatory mortgages, usurious interest rates, fraudulent appraisals, and false promises. So it turns out that it really is small comfort that Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson last week proposed the biggest regulatory overhaul of the credit industry since the Great Depression. Unfortunately for those who have been debtors, the damage has already been done. While the government enforcement apparatus was focused on debtors in the last 4 years or so, bankruptcy law being one good example, the credit industry had a Mardi Gras kind of a party, and the resulting hangover has been described, for example, by Jane Bryant Quinn as the most significant financial crisis we've had since the 1930s. So we really have to soak that in intellectually to understand where we are as a culture right now in America. That doesn't look good, and it doesn't sound very good, and we're not harbingers of doom and disaster here, but we definitely want to be sober about what we're looking at, the circumstances we are in collectively, and then, of course, knowing where our footing is, we can find ways to get out of it, which this show will focus on today a little bit and more in the future. But I really want to share some of the visceral realities that go with this kind of setup that middle and lower class people find themselves in. Let's just take an example, and we'll call her Jane Smith, and just say, well, she's a single mom. Someone told her she could have that American dream, have a home of her own in which to raise her children. But no one ever adequately explains the small print. She's not properly represented at her negotiation stage or her closing stage. And then she'll say later on, I thought I had a house, and now I am afraid I'm going to lose it, and I do not know why. No one ever explains to her that with her child support income and waitress job, she couldn't really afford this mortgage that they were selling her, especially with the slick predatory features built into it. No one explained to her that her mortgage payments would increase by leaps and bounds, and they really framed her into thinking of a monthly payment, a minimum monthly payment, which is really something that exists at the beginning but doesn't continue. Rather, they tell her that the housing industry is solid, the value of houses is permanently really, really solid in America, and the interest rates will stay low, the buyer's market will be great, and in fact, in a few years, she'll be able to get an even better refinancing package. That's what she heard. No one explained that in a foreclosure, she would lose her American dream, her money, her credit, and her hopes that she could really be a homeowner. Now, I don't want to be cynical because, you know, homeowners' purchases are really an engine of productivity for the rest of our economy, at least theoretically. You know, when a house is bought, sales of utilities, appliances, furniture, household goods and furnishings, and other kinds of necessities related to house or home ownership do increase. That creates a flow of income and jobs for other people. But the truth of that thinking is that when the mortgage bust happens, then the rest of the economy dependent upon the homes and the mortgages and home ownership becomes unstable, and that's really spread throughout the economy. So this is kind of a sad picture that we see Jane and thousands like her who were sold a dream. They really didn't cause the current credit crunch. No, we can really look more at the originators like Bear Stearns, the country's fifth largest investment bank and a big player in subprime securities. Now, just recently, Bear Stearns agreed to be sold to J.P. Morgan Chase at a steep discount in order to avoid declaring bankruptcy. Of course, they're being back supported and bailed out by the Federal Reserve. But just think about that. Bear Stearns and Federal Reserve Chief Ben Bernanke, who orchestrated this whole bailout, were worried about filing bankruptcy. That's kind of strange. The truth is stranger than fiction. So the federal government is preventing bankruptcy for the ultra-wealthy business and giving us the bankruptcy law that makes the small consumer really struggle these days. So what we see was that, just in our example, the dream of home ownership was offered and then it was ripped away. And millions of Americans and their children are learning a bitter lesson about greed. Unfortunately, that is the bottom line reality. We're seeing that the powerless are really being beaten up by the powerful in a financial sense. And a lot of our economy is being destroyed right before our eyes by those businesses and players whom we perceive to be powerful. For a bankruptcy attorney, we look at the situation and we see that the system focuses on petty misdemeanors while the creditors loot and really, in some sense, defraud everyone. And I think that what we really want is that the regulatory and enforcement efforts are equitably balanced between the debtor and the creditor. So that's some of the bad news, but the truth is we can turn the page. And not only turn the page, we can start a new chapter of good news. If you are just tuning in, this is attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. And we were just talking about some of the unfortunate bad news regarding debt, but we're really going to focus for the rest of the program today and then in the future on some of the good news and how to deal with debt, how to start a new chapter in one's finances, basically take control of your personal situation. I think the theme is, and a principle, don't leave it up to politicians and big businesses to save you. They will not save you. There is no rescue program despite the promises for rescues. It's not going to come from there. You have to take control yourself in your own life with your own finances. And the key word for today will be balance. You have to create balance by yourself and for yourself. That really is the key principle. So as we said earlier, there are stages of discussion, and we're going to start stage two today, which is really the comfortable stage of having debt, how to make and keep it comfortable, how to create balance so as not to be in trouble with your debt, and how, in effect, to actually improve your finances over time. At this juncture, an important note in credit is that many of the thoughts, ideas, and examples which I will be using now are based on the work theories and the books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter, Amelia Warren Tyagi. Professor Warren has been named one of the 50 most influential women's attorneys in America. She has testified before Congress on numerous occasions regarding debt, credit cards, and bankruptcy. She's appeared on many TV shows like The Today Show and Dr. Phil, and her works are highly recommended by me for middle and lower class people everywhere. She has a number of books out, and I recommend that you check them out. Of course, my own ideas and spin from my experience in life, in my legal practice, my finances, and my background as an educator will be woven into this thinking. And as I said, the key word here is balance. We want to create a strong vessel on what is, as I noted before, dangerous water. That is the current economy. Very, very chancy. And part of the thinking in creating balance is we need a long-term plan for approaching debt service and all of our finances. We have to think holistically. Staying healthy financially for most people in the lower and middle class means we have to be conservative. However, we don't want to be uptight and rigid. We want to live. And to do that, we have to think in a balanced way, we have to analyze in a balanced way, and we have to perform in a balanced way. Dr. Warren's research has led to a very simple and incredibly powerful financial principle, as this is true for other researchers, but her data in particular. And that principle really is, as I've said, it's balance, balancing your money. Balance is the secret to sound finances. Some people get ahead, some people struggle constantly. It's really because of balance. So let's think about it. What is balance? We see it in other areas of life. Doctors tell us about balance all the time, a balanced diet with grains and plenty of fruits and vegetables. Get your protein and carb groups in. Get the right vitamins and minerals. You can think of that, and we do try to practice that. Then there's the concept of just having generally a balanced lifestyle, diet, exercise, daily and seasonal routine. We're working enough, we're playing enough, we're exercising enough, and we're getting enough rest. So everything is done in a balanced fashion. And this is a very important concept as a health educator for years too, and an athlete, someone who exercises regularly myself, and I've been doing it, I think, all 54 years of my life. What I recognize is that you don't stress and strain with your exercise, that you think of exercise not just in terms of the 45 minutes or hour that you're exercising, but also in terms of your diet, in terms of your rest, in terms of doing things in a way which have long-term effects, that they are sustainable. They're not just for some short-term fix, that if you really want to be exercising for life, you have to think in terms of health. So diet, exercise, daily seasonal routine, they're all interwoven to get a sustainable long-term approach. Now, this is no different when we're thinking about money, when we're thinking about debt. We have to think long term, and we have to think about all of the key elements that create long term financial health. Now, don't fear. We're not just talking about lots of budgeting, you know, start at the edges and cut back here and trim over there. And like that concept of dieting, that you cut out the cookies and the sugar and the sweets and something good will happen. But that's just kind of a piecemeal approach. And it's not just about slight modifications. It's about a comprehensive lifetime plan. Same thing in diet as we will see in our economics. We need to have a master plan so that over time it will succeed, not fail. And I'm not talking about a get-rich plan. There are lots of books for that. But if you look at these books, actually, they mostly apply to people who already have lots of money and can put it at risk. Lots of money does tend to bring some more money, but most of us don't fit into the category of lots and lots of discretionary income. And so we don't want to gamble with the markets and with our money because we have some income, but we have some debt and we have some limits. And without thinking in some holistic master plan, we may trim here in one area and a few expenses in one place, but then we will overspend somewhere else. And that won't do anyone any good. You don't cut out the candy and soda while gorging on cakes. So we need to start by approaching our money in a whole new holistic way. No complicated lists, no spending diaries. I have to laugh, I'm a fan of Thomas Jefferson's, but Thomas Jefferson had elaborate spending diaries and lists of expenditures, and unfortunately at several times and towards the end of his life, he was bankrupt. So we don't want to just keep these rigid lists and fret on them. Instead, we want to analyze our spending by dividing it into three simple categories. There is one category for your regular monthly bills, which we'll call necessities. A second category for the money you can spend just for fun, the wants that you have in your life, your reasonable desires. And a third category for savings, which is your future safety net. So the three categories, necessities, wants, and savings. And what we'll learn is that you can make lots of choices within each category once you analyze and understand them, so long as the overall category doesn't get too heavy or too light. Balance, that's the key. When your money is in balance, you have designed your finances so that you will always have enough to cover your needs. This means that you always have enough to pay your bills without worrying. And what I think is really important, it means that you have something in your pocket left over for a little fun and fulfillment. And when you start analyzing, planning, and living with the concept of balance, you can build your wealth or affluence more than just money. Affluence means also your health and your relationships. And this all creates a brighter future for yourself. Day by day, dollar by dollar, you will build real affluence with a plan that is easy, steady, and strong, and is based on research and data that corroborate its validity. So this is just a start, but when your money is in balance, you always have enough to pay your bills, have some fun, and save for your dreams. And really, the best part of this thinking is that once your money is in balance, you can stop worrying about it. Because managing your money becomes automatic, and it moves into the background of your life where it belongs. We will continue with this in the next program. And as we progress, I think you'll enjoy what we'll teach here. So this is attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeindebt@gmail.com. Have a great day.